Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. It is still Constitution Week. There's a lot of groups and different organizations that find the best day appropriate for the community needs to commemorate and celebrate. And as I was speaking with the founder of the Constitution Club yesterday, we were actually discussing the factors of, you know, why the Constitution Day or Constitution Day, the 17th of September, is not a holiday. And if I pose the natural question, is Constitution Day more important than our Declaration of Independence? And so the question, actually, if you look at this in a historical perspective, most everybody just clings to the Declaration of Independence because it truly was the first, other than the Magna Carta and the Glorious Revolution's Bill of Rights as Englishmen, for the framers, because they clung to those Bill of Rights that came from that Glorious Revolution that happened basically a century before the American Revolution. And if you if you look at this in a macro perspective, the Declaration of Independence was the clearing to establishing the Constitution, because the Constitution truly is the framework. It is the establishing of a very, very defined and limited federal government and creating a hybrid constitutional republic. And I say that, and most people hear me say this a lot, but I'll give you the details another perspective of what a hybrid constitutional republic is. Most constitutional republics either identify that it is a confederacy where there is limited, truly limited powers that are given to the general government, and that most all sovereignty is retained at the states of the republic. In a federation, which most people feel like we're a federation or a federal government, because most all powers are surrendered to that federal government so that they're sovereign over almost all things, and that the states are really very limited. And if you look at most republics, that's how they were. The Roman Republic, even the British Republic, and many of the European republics, the states were just administrative facets. But our Constitutional Republic basically created a federation that did give them all the power necessary to do all of the things delegated to it, which was beyond a standard confederation. So centralizing taxes for the administrative things that they needed to do for national security, foreign relations, commerce, trade, and being able to create a legal system that protected both the states from each other as well as protected people from states and so forth. And so it was truly a hybrid, because we retained both the Confederation and established a strong federal government, especially with that direct taxation. That was a huge killer, and it was a huge arguable, if you've listened to my reading through the ratification debates, it was one of the most argued points in almost all of the ratification debates. They did not like the ability for this centralized government to be able to tax. So anyway, back to this high view look. Should we be recognizing the Constitution as a holiday? And we both agreed that we should. We believe that the Constitution Day is far more of a significant day, where the states, literally through their own design and from the divine hand of providence, were granted a system that actually created different barriers. Not only just were we established on these principles of the Declaration of Independence, but we created a system of separation of powers and levels of sovereignty that literally guaranteed that we would not be run amok as long as we held to these principles and standards that they established. And so obviously they didn't. But bottom line is, there is a process to getting back to that. And that is, again, I believe, based on the divine inspiration that the good Lord saw that if he put this into context of a contract, and that the states were the stakeholders of that contract, invested them that authority in the Constitution, which he did, then we do have the power. It's just a matter of waking up the states, kind of like King Rohan in Mordor, or King Rohan in the Lord of the Rings, to basically stand up, bring his armies, and go help fight the armies of Mordor and so forth. So sorry for the sub-references, but the other thing I think that I would like to get everybody to start centering on is, when is your state's birthday? Because the states should be celebrating and making hoopla. And actually, there are states. I know Kentucky, and I know Tennessee, and I know some of the early states that joined the Union actually do celebrate their birthdays. But I think that it has been downplayed, and the constitutional awareness has gotten to a point where people don't even understand the importance of it. And that's why I really would love to see more and more people start promoting and demanding that the states and local government start setting aside their day of entering into the Republic as a holiday and a day of important recognition. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of get into a back dialogue of what I spoke about yesterday after the show. We left off with Article 1, Section 7. I just finished off, or I got one more paragraph in Section 7, then we're going to be going into Section 8 today. As we go through the Constitution this week, I think this is the only time, and I think this is the appropriate time, that we actually go through this, and this is why my focus is to try to highlight, which John Rowland has done, and his version of the Constitution, you go to the Constitution Society and get it. I've actually got a PDF of it on reclaimingtherepublic.org on my Red State Talk Radio podcast page. I need to be calling John and talking to him, because I haven't talked to him in a long time. And hopefully he's doing well. I know he's had some setbacks and so forth. But anyway, I digress. This show is sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org, as well as 1798part2.org and republicreview.org. This show is definitely dedicated to supporting state legislators who are seeking and ready to fight tyranny and are looking to serve their citizens and protecting them from federal tyranny. And so there are 5,445 state legislators. We need to make sure that they understand the responsibility, that they will finally do their job and stand up, just like Jefferson and Madison when they went to Kentucky and Virginia. So I want to make sure I get all of this in, because when we come back from the hard break in the second segment, I want to actually be reading the Constitution, because there's a lot to go through, especially Section 8. So let me ask you this. If you are really thinking about getting involved, there are different ways you can. I need your support, and I will tell you that there are ways you can get involved with the Constitution Club and talking more and more with Keith. I hope to have him on sometime soon so we can kind of talk about what the Constitution Club is doing and what it really offers. I would not be able to do the club nearly the service, because I only have a cursory or a elementary understanding of all of the facets of this organization. But I would highly recommend you go check it out. It costs nothing at this point in time to join. I've been trying to, not admonish, but I've been trying to get Keith to, because it costs money to create these sites. It costs money to do the hosting and so forth. And getting people in and getting them to start working and working together, we want people to have a level of protection and so forth. So I'm hoping that it becomes actually a cost to join membership. But get in there now and join. There may be like a big reprieve for the first year or something. I don't know. I know that these things will be discussed in the near future, because the Constitution Club needs to... It has a very important role, and it needs to be able to start getting its club members engaged, because there's a lot of work to be done, and not all of the work necessarily needs to be done by the state legislators up front. We have to get a local awareness and get enough people to create enough of a clamor. Because if you want to upset the city council, just show up with 50 people. The city council probably doesn't even have room. Most city councils may not have room for 50 people to show up outside their normal fan club that sits in there. And if all of a sudden there's 50 people that have a very myopic cause and or purpose, you can really upset the ore cart. And that's all it takes, is a very small amount. Look at what the Indivisibles, look at what Antifa does, because they don't have thousands and thousands of people that show up. And when they do have these big rallies, if you haven't heard, a lot of these people get bussed in or flown in and brought all around across the country. There are professional protesters and organizers on that side that get paid by Soros. There are far more people, good citizens, in every single one of these vicinities that could easily outshine and outmuster the opposition. And that's what we need to start doing. It's going to require some level of commitment. And if you're not willing to at least get out there and do work, I hope that you're willing to join clubs that are actually helping to do those things and paying that little bit of money. Because it's just like running for politics. It costs money to actually print signs, to put your name on the ballot, and to get into the game. And we have to start backing. That's why I constantly tell people, give the people you vote for a buck or two a week. That's nothing. But in magnitude, if they've got 10,000 voters for them, that's $10,000 to $20,000 if everybody just gave them a buck. We can, as we start pooling together and helping and contributing in little ways like that, we make a huge difference. I'm at a hard break. So when we come back, I'm going to be diving into Article 1, Section 8. And I hope you stick with us. Please stay tuned. This is the power section, folks. So we want you to get this. And so we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so, as I promised, we're going to go dive right into Article 1, Section 8. But I do need to do my obligatory analysis because I did look through the news. I've scoured. I've even looked out my window. There is no sign of the federal government disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers, my friends. And if you're waiting for that day to come, I can pull out a crystal ball or, you know, a round piece of glass. It doesn't really matter. Both of them will be equally as accurate, that the federal government will never relinquish any of its usurped powers. We, the people, are going to have to demand that our state legislators do the job. It will be so much easier if we could get one state to stand up like David against Goliath, and then everybody would look to that state and go, really, what? And that's where cancer education comes in. People go, can they really do this? They're going to learn that they can, and they're going to be absolutely overwhelmed with, why didn't we start doing this before? And it doesn't matter why we didn't. It means that we start doing it now, and we actually start acting now in taking back our roles, responsibilities, and powers that were never delegated to that federal government. So with that, I would like to get right back into where I had left off. And so this is Article 1, Section 7. This is the very last paragraph of Section 7. Every order, resolution, or vote to which the concurrence of the Senate and House of Representatives may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment, shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him or disapproved by him, shall be repassed by two-thirds of the Senate and House of the Representatives according to the rules and limitations prescribed in the case of the bill. And so this kind of sets that watermark, because we were just talking about, you know, what it takes to overcome a veto by the president if the veto wants to overrule the House and or the Senate. You have to have two-thirds of both houses to do that. And basically, they're just saying that everything really does have to go to, other than the cases of adjournment. You don't have to go to the president to call for an adjournment. But if you're going to do an act, or if you're going to create any legislation, resolutions, or those types of things, the only other thing, actually, that I know of, that the House and the Senate do not need to provide to the president is an Article 5 amendment. They have to pass with two-thirds majority, and once both houses pass it, I believe it goes over to the Office of Registration, or the Congressional Registration Office, and then they send out the amendment out to the states. Now, I believe that they also provide the president a courtesy copy so that he can see it, so that he understands, if this is passed, what new laws, or how is he going to have to effectively exercise this new law, role, responsibility, power, or what have you. So anyway, let me move on to Section 8. And this is really important, because this is where the powers are enumerated. When you hear them talking in the ratification debates about the enumerated, or the list of powers, this is it. These are the powers that have been given to Congress, and these are very specific, and many of them are conjoined in principle. So let me come to, and when I get to that, when I get to some of these, like taxation, I'll show you how they're kind of conjoined. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, let me first get to the violations here. First off, that all duties, imposts, excises shall be uniform throughout the United States is violated. Income tax is significantly violated because it is not uniform throughout the United States, because it is progressive. It is supposed to be apportioned to the states, period. As it stated earlier in a previous section, that all taxes are to be given to the states in apportionment, so that the states are the ones that are supposed to pay this. So in the common defense and the general welfare portion of this clause does not mean anything of granting or a portal. And Madison, in his veto, really clarifies this, as well as in the ratification debates, that this comment of the common defense and general welfare, because this is that little clause where people say, oh, well, the federal government can do anything for our common defense and general welfare. No. The general welfare means that this is how they are to apply the general welfare of these powers. In other words, this clause alone only is pertaining to these clauses in Article 1, Section 8. It is not an ambiguous portal that says, you know, you can actually, you know, find that welfare is education and healthcare and those things. No. If you read Madison's argument in Congress in 1792 in his cod fishery bounties with Mr. Livingston, he clearly points out, and he uses the most egregious example he possibly can, where everybody kind of goes, oh, really? You know, that'd be terrible. And this is where he states that if we could actually start using general welfare for accessing the public purse to buy favors and to be able to do things outside the enumerated powers, then Congress would eventually start establishing education and churches and doing all sorts of things that are well, and that's when everybody goes, oh, no, we're not supposed to do that. And that's when everybody got it, that this little clause right here really is only to apply in a general sense of how they are to apply these other enumerated powers. So moving on, they also have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. And so there's very, really rare occasions, other than when we go to war, that we would really need to borrow money if we're spending the money on constitutional powers. If you look at the budget today, we are literally borrowing money. And so this line in itself is being violated. John Rowland doesn't have it highlighted, but it is being violated because we're not to borrow money on things that we don't have power to borrow money on. It's like a company going to the bank and saying, I publish books and I need to borrow money so that I can build a bridge. Well, the bank would actually realize that they can't do that. You don't have the power to do that. You're a business that only publishes books. And so they would make that correlation very quickly. But when the federal government does it, nobody questions them. And so they only have the power to borrow money for those necessary things that are within these enumerated powers, period. The next one, to regulate commerce, which is they violate this all the time, with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Now, the term to regulate in 1787, and Douglas Gibbs always beats his chest on this, and so I'll give him the props because, you know, he's actually done the due diligence, and anybody that does the due diligence will find that the term to regulate does not mean to create every facet of regulations and laws and restrictions. To regulate at that point in time meant to put in good order, to ensure that things were working properly, but not to intervene, or anything. And as a matter of fact, in the ratification debates, they talked clearly about the fact that they were not to intervene in interstate commerce, that only with the Commerce Clause, this is the Commerce Clause, that they're to regulate commerce among the several states. Only when one state is levying an unfair tax or creating an unfair advantage. If you understand what happened that led up to the Civil War, the northern states were violating the Commerce Clause, and the federal government was culpable in allowing that to happen because they were actually allowing imposts or actually tariffs on some of the goods that were going into the southern states and coming out. And so they were actually performing economic warfare sanctioned by the federal government, which was a clear violation of the federal government and the Constitution. The next clause, the next power, this is power 4, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Now, this uniform rule of naturalization is the process of immigrants coming to the United States. There was a clause, and we'll get to it a little bit later. It's called the 1808 Clause. I think it's in Section 9. It might be in 10. But anyway, the 1808 Clause. States at this point in time were allowed to import people. In other words, they were allowed to bypass the federal government and bring people straight into the state. And most of those people that they were importing were laborers, i.e. slaves and or indentured servants or what have you, for commerce purposes. And so that 1808 clause, which was a 20-year delay on ending the importation, at that point in time, then the federal government had control over all people coming in and out because the states were no longer allowed to import slaves or import people directly, that the federal government kind of took on that that role of centralizing and standardizing immigration and immigration standards. So as you can tell, I'm at a hard break. When we come back, we will get into Power Five. We've got a ways to go. Thank you so much, and we'll be right back after this. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, let me actually provide one little bit of clarification, because I'm not repeating this every time I read a power. What I should be saying before each of these powers is the Congress shall have power than the power as listed below. So this next one, because I want to make sure I emphasize this, the Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin. So we're supposed to regulate the value of our coin against foreign coin or foreign money, and fix the standard of weights and measures, so that we know exactly how we went to the pound instead of the metric kilograms and the metric system and so forth. And I know, I think somebody can call in if they want. I believe that they decided to go to the metric system like 100 years ago, and we still never have adopted that. And you know, I think that's great. But anyway,
The point is that this is a big violation. As a matter of fact, Congress has the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. For the Federal Reserve to constitutionally exist, this would have to change, and they would have to amend the Constitution to allow the Federal Reserve to do all of the things that they're having it do in establishing the districts and so forth, and these banks. Bottom line, this is a huge red flag violation, period. And so I know lots of people get really hung up on the coin part. I want to put this in perspective that if you understand, and the other thing I have to include with this is this very bottom clause of Article 1, Section 8, where it goes into to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for the carrying into execution the foregoing powers. Okay, so after every time I read one of these things, as Nicholas said, you could actually just repeat that line at the end of this. So to coin money, regulate the value thereof and of the foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures and all laws necessary to exercise this power, instead of having that at the very end. Because a lot of people kind of forget that the Congress was given some latitudes, and I don't want to use the word implied powers, but Congress was given the ability to do those things that are necessary and proper for them to actually fulfill these responsibilities. Because bottom line, these are responsibilities, roles, and powers that the states are delegating to the federal government to do. If the states do not want the federal government to do these things anymore, then they need to come into the Constitution via an amendment, Article 5 process, and remove a power or two or those things that they don't want the federal government to do anymore. Anyway, let me move on. So the Congress have the power to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States. So this is an interesting power, because if you understand the fact that they are listing powers, if it is not listed here, then this is the first law that they have to provide the punishment for. So in other words, they have the control over this particular law. If somebody gets caught counterfeiting, the federal government has jurisdiction over any and all cases of counterfeiting. Well, the reason I'm pointing this out is, let's say you happen to go across the border and you bring drugs back. Does the federal government have the jurisdiction within the Constitution to actually have jurisdiction to try you and give, say, hey, that's a crime? It's not in the Constitution, my friends. Now, the states, they may not have it either. And so bottom line is, they're relying on the federal government, because the federal government has kind of took the lead in usurping the state's powers. But if there's no law on the books and in the Constitution in the particular state, let's just take, for example, California. Does California have interstate and international drug trafficking laws? They probably refer to the federal government. I'm not trying to give somebody this bypassing process, but I'm just trying to point out that if it is not enumerated, and I'm only using this other example for an example, that if it is not enumerated, then if the federal government is exercising a power, it is considered unconstitutional tyranny, because it is an arbitrary power not delegated. So, moving on, the Congress to have the power to establish post offices and post roads. I want to clarify this. Most people do not know what a post road is. A post road has nothing to do with the post office. A post road is the access road that will lead from state and or several states to the seat or the to District of Columbia, to the seat of government, the federal government. So that's why the federal government has the responsibility of making sure that every state has access to them, because back in those days they just couldn't get in a helicopter or fly or you know, raft down river. All rivers didn't flow to DC. It may seem a little different right now with all the rain and so forth, but believe me, they needed to have a way, and they said that the federal government would have the responsibility of ensuring that post roads, a primary route for every state. And so what they ended up doing was they created like an interstate system that would go from, as they started going east or west, or I should say actually north, south, and west, northwest and southwest. They created directions that would then later on, as states grew, they would tie one state to that state to its post road so that they would be more efficient in, instead of having 50 spokes to the hub of DC. It's far more efficient to do it that way. And if you look, we actually have interstate roads that are within the confines of those post roads. But they have, if you look at interstates going north and south, like I-5, I-5 is not a constitutional post road because it's only leading from Canada to, Canada to Mexico. My point being, my friends, is that post roads are very specific and that the federal government did have the responsibility of maintaining those roads. Next law, or next power, the Congress to have the power to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. So this basically created the copyright patenting of the United States because we wanted to be able to promote entrepreneurial inventions and good business orders. But, and this is one of those things that we could really go down a rat hole and have a very good long discussion on the protection of intellectual property. Are you telling me that Mein Kampf, which is, you know, like anything that's 75 years old, there's still copyrights on the original publication? You're kidding me, right? I honestly think that we really need to start looking at, how to go down this path. But this is not a priority by any stretch of the means. This isn't a big problem, but I think it is a problem because I know the pharmaceutical companies, you know, do have a lot of money that they invest, but they're making hand over fist of the way they do charge and so forth. Don't necessarily like it, but that's the system that we've got. And the only way we can change it is making really significant changes in getting the federal government out of healthcare and drugs and giving it to agencies that I will just tell you that are not profit oriented. There are such things, but I don't want to get into that now because I'm just taking time away from this. So the next one, and this limited times, by the way, is in this line, by securing for limited times, that has really been violated because it was originally, I think, just like 5 years or 10 years that patents were to be established. And then people could start copying those things if they could come up with ways of doing that. But they've actually extended this and extended this and extended this to a point of obscurity where, you know, technology actually surpasses those things and it becomes more of an inhibitor for our progress economically. Anyway, the next power, Congress have the power to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. In other words, to have a federal court system to allow the federal court system to engage in those issues that are between state to state commerce issues that are legitimate. But these court systems and these federal courts were really not heavily engaged. There weren't a lot of federal jurisdiction until Marshall started expanding on it in 1803 with Marbury v. Madison. and judicial review, and he literally started expanding federal jurisdiction. That's why that ratification debate, if you go back to my Friday ratification debate quotation from John Marshall in the Virginia ratification debates, he points out how the federal government is limited to these very specific enumerated powers. They have no other jurisdiction, and he knew that. And by him stating that they had any jurisdiction that they felt necessary and proper, he knew he was lying in those hallmark cases that he actually started obscuring the lines and limitations of the Constitution and allowing the federal government to grow well beyond its measure. Anyway, I'm at another hard break, and see, I haven't even gotten through half of these powers yet, so please stay tuned, and we'll get through most of them when we get back. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so this next power is kind of interesting because I think it throws some people off sometimes. That Congress have the power to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. These rules aren't for the government. These rules are for the organization, in other words, how the military, the land and naval forces are to govern themselves and the regulation of them. So this one line is literally focused on that they have the power. In other words, it is Congress. I want to be clear here. It is Congress that has the power to define the organizations of the armed forces and their regulations. So when an executive order comes out and dictates that a certain policy is going to be allowed, let's say allowing homosexuality in the armed forces, any president that does an executive order in that manner is violating this. And this has been violated, my friends, because the president commonly makes executive orders in changing the regulation and or the governing of these entities and bodies. And he does not have the power because clearly it here has been delegated. And I do not see an amendment to the Constitution to allow the president the discretion of regulating and changing the governing processes of the military, period. The next one is the Congress to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. So I want to be clear on this one. This is actually being violated a lot more than it is indicated. He's got it as, you know, more than, it's orange, not red. I believe this is red because you can see that the federal government is providing money and training and equipping sheriffs and municipality police forces, but nowhere in here or in the enumerated powers does Congress have the ability to provide for the military, the training, and the equipping of law enforcement for New York City or any of these police agencies and or districts and or sheriffs and so forth. Just to be clear, nor does it say to create a National Guard at every state. It is called a militia. And that is what it is to be. And this is the clarification, which is in the next power, that Congress have the power to provide. And this is immensely violated just due to the fact that federal dollars are going into law enforcement agencies is a huge violation of the Constitution. And it says here to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers. So in other words, the appointment of officers and their organization is actually left to the states, and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So Congress has these powers, not the president. And this is a huge violation. And the fact that we have these out of control, you know, law enforcement agencies with all this military gear is a huge violation. There is no amendment to the Constitution to allow the federal government to militarize your police department or your sheriff's department. They have their own responsibilities for enforcing the local laws. The militia has a very unique and important role and responsibility. And I'm telling you that if we actually started organizing and employing the militia once again, many of our community problems will actually go away, because this is where we make sure that everybody is either a member of the militia and or they are registered as hostile to the militia and are, you know, not necessarily given the free agencies that they should be given, you know, like these MS-13 gang members and criminals. They wouldn't be members of the militia. Anybody that wants to run around and commit, you know, gang crimes and those types of things, if we actually had militias, gangs would probably go away, because we would actually have a greater cognizance and greater awareness of what our community is doing, who in our community, and we would actually still have a community essence within the United States instead of this, you know, nothing outside my door I know about or do I care about. You know, it's time that we start going back to these basic principles. But anyway, Congress have the power to exclusively or to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may by secession of particular states or cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of government of the United States. And so what I just said there is that Congress has the exclusive legislation of all things over the District of Columbia. And when I mentioned this before, the Civil Rights Act is the law of District of Columbia. It is not an amendment. It is not applied to the United States. The Civil Law Act is only legally and constitutionally applied to the District of Columbia. Got that? If it's to be constitutional and the supreme law of the land, it has to become an amendment. period. And so the next part of this is, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislatures of the state in which. So they're saying here that, okay, the federal government can go and purchase all these different types of places in which the same shall be for the erection of. And so this is the qualifier of what the federal government can purchase for. For the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings, and to make all, and so this is the necessary and proper clause that is added to this. I want to be clear here, though, because things have actually grown. If you understand the reason why they had dockyards included in here, because the federal government had a responsibility of regulating and making sure that imposts were applied to all foreign commerce coming in. So they had a responsibility to inspect and ensure imposts were being applied to all of that commerce coming in from that foreign land, from those foreign businesses or what have you. So they had a responsibility of setting up facilities and or needful buildings in every port. Well, the world's changed a lot. Now, even though we don't have a rail system that goes to Europe, we do have a rail system that goes in and out, just like a truck system or a highway system, I should say, that goes in and out shipping of goods north and south. So we do have to have needful buildings for the inspection of commerce coming in and out, making sure that the commerce or the tariffs or the imposts, I should say, are being paid by those nations and corporations that are shipping in these goods into the United States. Now, let's expand this a little bit, because this means that the necessary and proper would also then go to airfields, because we do ship in commerce via aircraft. You know, regardless, I know it may be a little more expensive than bringing it in via ship, but we do ship in commerce via aircraft. So there is a necessity for needful buildings at airports, international airports, that might be bringing in forms and levels of commerce, because all commerce needs to be declared at every port of entry. So I just, you know, I'm giving the government some latitude, because a lot of people don't think of it in that context. But as we've expanded technologically and as we've moved from just shipping things to actually having highways with trucks, motor vehicles and trains, because they didn't have those modes of transportation and shipment back in those days, we do now. And so it only goes to say that we don't necessarily need to amend the Constitution, but we understand the implication of what Congress's role and responsibility is here. And that's why we should be able to, it shouldn't give anybody a headache is what I'm trying to say, in that Congress does need to have needful buildings for the inspection and or the declaration of all commercial and commerce coming into the United States. And now comes the wide sweeping clause that ends Section 8, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or officer thereof. To be very clear, this necessary and proper clause is hard, fast tied to the enumerated powers and only powers that are within the Constitution. Now, there are a few other powers listed in other spots of the Constitution, but I want to be very clear. This is, when they talk about the enumerated powers, this is it right here. Now, the Section 9, this is kind of interesting, because this is where we talk, and I believe this is where we get into the, yep, this is the slave trade, and this is the importing of people. Section 9, let me see, I've got 3 seconds left, so I really don't have time to get into Section 9. I'm going to have to do that tomorrow. And there's a good likelihood, because I'm actually trying to marry this up to the infractions of the federal government. So there's a good likelihood we'll do the amendments with the Bill of Rights Week coming up in December. God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. Thank you for tuning in, and we will continue to cover the Constitution this week. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.